Hello, and welcome to the...
I love dolphins!
Wait, was that a dolphin?
Wait a minute! Hold on!
Wait, killer whales are dolphins?
Welcome to the Dolphin Pod.
Dolphin science?
Dolphin science!
Hello, Dolphin Pod listeners. It's Justin Gregg, your host of the Dolphin Pod. So it's been a while since we've had an episode, and I'm very excited to be back in the saddle today, talking with two researchers from the Dolphin Communication Project who have written two separate papers on a very exciting topic, at least exciting to me and maybe to other dolphin nerds. It's the subject of what happens when dolphins from different social groups, sometimes totally different species, get together and live in the same place. It turns out, they're way nicer to each other than you would expect. To get to the bottom of all this dolphin niceness and to talk about these two articles, I've invited two of the authors, Kelly and Nicole, onto the program. So this is my interview with them. First of all, Kelly, please introduce yourself.
I am Kel Melillo-Sweeting. I was formerly DCP's Bimini Research Manager, and I am now DCP's Outreach Manager.
And Nicole?
I'm Nicole Danaher-Garcia. And I was formerly a DCP postdoc, and I am now a research associate with DCP.
So I've got two research articles I'm going to talk about, which you both were authors on, both involved in the research. And so they are related, and they have to do with dolphins around Bimini. So before we even start talking about either of those papers, can someone, perhaps someone who's an expert in the area of dolphins around Bimini, which is both of you, explain what dolphins live there, and where the heck is Bimini?
Bimini is a teeny island in the country of the Bahamas independent country, and it is the closest inhabited Bahamian island to the east coast of Florida. So when we watch the sun set over the Gulf Stream at the end of the day, then it's like the sun never stops setting, but it's just the light pollution from Miami.
Oh, I see.
So that's how close we are.
Could you swim there?
And what's that?
Could you swim there?
I could not swim there. No. Maybe people who do like the English Channel kind of swimmy swims, maybe.
Okay.
But I don't think it's recommended.
And so there are dolphins that live off of this island, and you are, you know, they have been studied by people, including the two of you. So who are these dolphins? What's going on?
So there are two species of dolphins that live close to the islands. There are the common bottlenose dolphins, which people are probably familiar with. They're all around the world. And then we have the Atlantic spotted dolphins, which were very cleverly named. They live in the Atlantic Ocean and they have spots. It's wonderful. And we have been studying these dolphins since 2003.
Yeah, so these two dolphins are living in the same area, and this is something that you've known about, so this wasn't the exciting new discovery in this paper, because you already knew that they were living in the same spot. Are they living there, both species, are they living there throughout the year? Are they going places and coming back, or are they literally there all the time?
You can go out, if the seas are calm enough for your boat, you can go out any day of the year and you have a chance to see either one or both of these species. We don't know how far they go in any given direction because we just head out on, you know, 4 or 5 hour long boat rides. So we're limited. We're looking at them when they're pretty close to Bimini. But we know that both species, males and females of both species, ages of all both species are hanging out around Bimini.
Right. So you've got these two dolphin species living together in all of these mixed groups off the coast of Bimini all the time. So those are the things you already knew going ahead of this study. And I'm going to talk about the first study, and I'll give the full title because it's very evocative and exciting. Atlantic spotted and bottlenose dolphins, sympatric distribution in nearshore waters off Bimini, comma, the Bahamas, comma, 2003 to 2018. That's the title. So to set it up, as far as I know, you were looking at a couple things. You were looking at habitat partitioning between the two species and changes that might have occurred before, or changes that would have occurred after a pier was built. So those seem to be the two subjects. But first, what on earth is habitat part? I can say this word. I'm a dolphin researcher. Habitat partitioning. What is that? What does that mean?
Well, and let's also maybe the word sympatric.
Oh, right. Sympatric. Yeah. What does that mean?
Right. We'll get into all of it because there are so many species, right, in the world, but there's only so much space. So species have to overlap. Every species can't just have its own space with absolute complete control over that space. But how do they all find enough food and enough space and not fight and not argue and not starve? And that kind of basis of, though we see the spotteds and the bottlenose in the same group sometimes, along the shoreline of Bimini, we really don't see that many mixed species groups. We either see bottlenose dolphins or we see spotted dolphins. So how are they figuring out who gets to use what space when?
So that's the partitioning part. Like they're living, it's like me and my neighbor. Like there's their yard and this is my yard, and we don't just wander willy-nilly into each other's yards. We've got our own locations, but we can meet down by the mailboxes. That's okay. And that's not weird. So it's sort of that feeling.
Right. But, and as Nicole knows a lot about, it's tough in the marine environment to like stand your ground on your territory and your spot. It's a lot more fluid, a lot more going on than a terrestrial species. We know both species are there off the beach in Bimini, but are they really using different areas? Are they partitioning their space?
So that was like question number one for this study. Like, how do these two species like divvy up the space? Which I guess if you think about it, it's true. In a 3D environment of the ocean, there is no obvious landmark that you can say like, well, this is my spot and that's yours, right? Is that why it's so difficult, Nicole? Because it's just, there's nowhere to know where one territory starts.
Yes, and a lot of times on land, there will be some resource that defines a species or a group's territory. So if, you know, a watering hole or like a patch of food, and you don't really have that in the ocean, there's no patch where there, it's not the only place that there are fish. The fish also move. So it becomes very difficult to define what your territory is when you have everything is in flux in three dimensions also.
Right. Okay, so that was the first thing you wanted to look at, but then you threw in this other exciting curveball, which is somebody built a pier in Bimini, and you were like, hey, what's up with that? So explain what was your rationale for including that or wanting to look at that problem?
We knew from our observations that the dolphins use the whole coastline of Bimini. And then kind of smack in fairly close to the middle, humans, go us, built a really big pier. And that meant dredging, and it meant pile driving. And now there's this big channel of deep water that just goes right through this nice shallow area that the dolphins used. So we wanted to see if, well, how did the two species of dolphins use the space before the pier was built and then after the pier was built? But we're scientists, and we didn't have the opportunity to collect data specifically on the construction. So we were just passing by looking for dolphins. We knew the construction was happening, but the construction of the pier wasn't the focus of any of our data collection. So we couldn't actually ask questions about what was happening during construction. So we basically had to just ignore that year.
Yeah, so you left it out of the analysis.
So we had to leave it out. So we really did look at the before and the after. We didn't look at what were the dolphins doing during the construction.
Okay, so you want to know how these two species are using the space and if the pier changed the way both species are using the space. So how on earth can you quickly explain, this is essentially what, how does DCP collect data? How do you go and figure out who these dolphins are, where they are, and what they're doing? What is the data collection protocol?
So we head out on a locally owned boat that's taking tourists out as well. And we head out the harbor and we cruise along the shoreline and then we keep going. And we're always in sight of Bimini, but it's a pretty big area, DCP's study area there in Bimini. But for this study, we just looked at data close to the coastline. So that meant on most boat trips, we had a chance to look on the way out, and then we had a chance to look on the way home. And once we see dolphins, we're noting the location with a GPS, latitude and longitude. If we're able to, if the boat has a depth reader, making note of the depth, counting the dolphins, which species, do we recognize anybody in general? What's their behavior? Are they traveling? Are they feeding? Just socializing? What are they doing? And then we get in the water, if we're able to, and collect video, acoustic recordings, photographs, as much stuff as we can. Because of course, if we were just to go by our notes, we would forget everything. So yeah. Photos and video are key to looking at it again, rewind, replay, all of that.
Yeah, and so you're able to recognize individuals for at least the spotteds, if right? And maybe also the regular common bottlenose? So you know individuals and who they are, and sometimes their sex as well. Great.
Yes, so the bottlenose we identify by their dorsal fins, like in a lot of other places in the world. And the spotted dolphins have unique spot patterns. They are born without spots, but they accumulate them throughout their life. But their spot pattern stays the same from one year to the next. So it's kind of like our fingerprints, we're able to identify them, except that they gain more spots as they get older.
Right. And in addition, you also did something in this paper that you described called creating a bathymetric model. What on earth does that mean?
Well, thank goodness I was not in charge of that portion. The amazing AJ handled that. I think that people often think, and I'm pointing at myself, you can't see me, right, that we already know so much about the ocean, right? And surely there's like a map of ocean depths for the whole ocean, right? Surely that's out there, except it's not. So we essentially had to create our own bathymetric map, which means like to be able to know how deep areas are. So not only were we interested in where were the dolphins, but we wanted to know how deep was the water where the dolphins were. And so we took all of our own depth recordings and match those with the latitude and longitude, and the amazing AJ plugged those into GIS. And then we used a handy dandy app. I'm so techy now.
App, yeah.
And then our dolphin sightings, latitude and longitudes that we didn't have a depth for, I hand entered in each of those data points and the app told me what the depth was. The range. And so then AJ could take that estimate and put it in. And then using cool GIS tricks, kind of smooth it all out so that we could assess generally, were the dolphins using the more shallow areas, the kind of middle-ish,
yeah,
12 to 20 meters, or the more than 20 meters, more than 60 feet-ish, deeper spots.
So I guess when you're trying to figure out the partitioning, like where they are to each other, now you have depth information. So you can say like, well, the bottlenose are up top near the shallow end and that sort of, that. So that's for the first time you're getting that information for these dolphins. That seems useful, I would imagine.
yeah. And, you know, just like, even though we just talked about how different it is in the marine environment versus terrestrial, but if you pictured a forest, right, you might have animals segregating and partitioning by some using the ground and some going up in a tree and some in between. So the dolphins don't have that option, but they do have different depth zones that they could decide.
Yes.
Hey, this is my turf. That can be yours.
Yeah, we're the low dolphins. You're the high dolphins. That's That makes sense. Great. So I then, well, let's get on to the results, because I've made myself a handy little guide here on this piece of paper as to what you found. And I want to look at the peer thing. So I imagine, okay, this is just a guess, Kel. Building a pier into the middle of an area where dolphins live seems like a bad idea, and you would think it would probably mess up their lives. So I imagine the hypothesis from your end is, or what you guessed you were going to find, was going to be that, like, this pier changed a lot about the way dolphins use the space. And then you get to these results, which I'm going to briefly summarize, and tell me when I get this incorrect, that the pier didn't really seem to change too much. The group sizes were about the same before and after the pier, so the number of dolphins in different groups stayed the same. The distribution of both species across the different geographic zones, like you're talking about, kind of was the same, and there was no changes to behavior in terms of, like, less feeding or more feeding because of the pier being built. There was some changes with the depth. This is what we're talking about here. But other than that, but you have an interesting explanation for that, which we'll get back to, because that bleeds into the next paper. So is that
foreshadowing?
Yes, foreshadowing for paper number two. But so it's Halloween, or it was Halloween, so we get spooky. But is that correct? Is the conclusion like, oh, okay, they built this huge pier and, like, nothing changed?
Yes, with the caveat that we don't know if anything changed while they were building the pier. Because remember, we didn't look at those data.
That could have been a crappy year, a terrible year for those dolphins.
Could have been a very stressful year for the dolphins.
Yeah.
But in general, I went into it, right, where scientists, we shake off what we think is going to happen, and we do our best to let the data tell the story. But I wasn't sure what was going to happen, because, like I mentioned, the pier now has this deep channel of water across a shallow area that never used to be there, and the actual physical pier, and a cruise ship coming in and out every day, right? That if the dolphins used to, one, use that area, would they use it less after the fact? And even if it wasn't about using that area, if they used to pass through the area to get from point A to point B, would this new channel, this new pier, this new use of a big noisy boat coming in and out change how they got from A to B?
Yeah.
Like, if your commute from your house to your job, if they send you on a detour for construction, sure, you can still get to work, but it takes more time. Might take more energy, gas in your car. It might be really annoying. Sure, you can get by, you can still do it, but you wish they didn't send you on a detour. So how might the dolphins have been impacted by this? In terms of space use and behaviors, very broad behavior categories, it doesn't seem like the pier is having any long-term impacts on the dolphins.
So that's cool. What's interesting for me is, because I'm, as a conservation-y minded person, I'm like, oh my god, you're building a pier, you're ruining things for these dolphins. Ugh, that's terrible. Let's look at the science to show that that's probably the case, and then the science shows, oh no, that's not the case. So then you're like, oh, okay. And then you change your mind, because that's how science works. You get data, and then you follow the data to the conclusion. I find that very exciting. However, there was that, I want to talk about that depth change thing, and maybe Nicole, you can do the foreshadowing here. So this is what you had written. We speculate that the change in the water depth use that you were saying here, it may be related to an unprecedented spotted dolphin immigration event off Bimini in 2013. An unprecedented immigration event. Can you explain what on earth that, don't give too much away, but explain what happened there to cause this weird immigration event?
So we, as we know, can recognize the dolphins that are around Bimini. And all of a sudden, we saw dolphins that were unfamiliar, and we did not think they were from Bimini in 2013. So that's what our second paper discusses.
Right. So just a year before the pier was built, a bunch of rando dolphins from somewhere else showed up and just started living off the coast of Bimini, essentially.
Yes.
Okay. So that may have influenced their depth usage. I'm curious as to why. How does that actually work? What is going on there? Why would that affect depth in use?
Well, like a bunch of new neighbors moved in.
Okay.
And you don't have any fences. So you got to figure out now, not only how are you going to use your space and give each other some space with the bottlenose dolphins you've lived your whole life with, but now there are suddenly about 50 new spotted dolphins. And, oh, wait, hold on. This was our area, but now you're there. So maybe I'll go over here.
All right. That makes total sense. It's crowded all of a sudden. A bunch of people using the same spot. Okay, so that's the pier thing, which is interesting. So now this partitioning thing. So this is the bottlenose and the spotted dolphins living in the same spot. How do they do it without wanting to kill each other? Because that's what normal neighbors would do. So what did you find? Just summarize how these two are living in terms of space and location usage.
So we found that the bottlenose overused, and I'll explain what that means in a second.
Oh.
The areas to
it's
the
very
south.
Very judgmental sounding, and that's what that is.
I know. A little overdoing okay. It on the south. And the spotted dolphins overused the areas to the north. So that was our first glimpse that these two species are living their lives in ways that help them get a little elbow room, a little space from each other. Now, the overuse idea is that we asked the questions about how are the dolphins using the space. We divided it into a north zone, a central zone, and a south zone. The central zone started it all. That's where the pier was being constructed. And we kind of made an estimate on, so the pier is there, a little bit to the north of it, a little bit to the south of it. We created this central zone. Okay, this is the area. If the dolphins are going to be impacted by the pier, this is going to be the strip where they're going to feel that impact. And then the space that was left over to the north, we called that the north zone.
Good name.
And the space that was left over to the south, we went ahead and called that the south zone.
Creative, good, yeah.
But the spaces weren't equal. The amount of area in each of those zones wasn't the same. So we had to not just ask how often are the dolphins using each of those zones. We had to ask it in terms of how big the zones were, the space availability. So the bottlenose dolphins were using the south zone more than we would expect at random based on how big the south zone was. The spotteds were using the north zone more than we would expect if it was just random, based on how big the north zone is, the available space they had.
Right. So a thing was going on. It seemed a real thing. They definitely were spreading out between those two zones. And the north zone was, now this is, you talk about this in the paper, so maybe you can explain, shallower? So there's a shallowness issue, is that right? So there's a lot of speculation in the paper about why they are where they are and the spotted dolphins preferring to do certain behaviors in shallower water. So what is that all about?
And they may feel a little safer. It's not every area in the ocean, but in Bimini, we think that the shallow areas offer some relative safety to their main predator, the old sharky poos, so that they may prefer, I'm not really supposed to use the word prefer, they may use the shallower areas more for socializing, mating, hanging out, doing all their things because there are fewer sharks there. But the spotted dolphins, as far as we know, do their feeding in the deep water. So they wouldn't want to have a big, long commute to the buffet line just for safety. And the north zone offers this really cool in-between. They've got access to a lot of relatively safe shallow water and a short zip over to the deep water to feed. Then they can zip right back to the relative safety of the shallows to mate, play, socialize, bond, do all their other dolphin stuff, zip back over to feed.
So you've got the spotteds and the common bottlenose, and they live essentially in separate areas in the same place. And are they then also like feeding at different times or socialize? You know, how else do they split up their time? Or or is that the whole thing? They just live in different spots, so they don't have to worry about each other.
Well, they seem to not overlap so much in this little shoreline area. The bottlenose, who are overusing the southern zone compared to what we would expect, they are also the species that do something called crater feeding, which I think we have an older Dolphin Pod episode about bottlenose dolphins crater feeding and being righties. The spotteds don't crater feed as a group, as a main source of their nutrition. The bottlenose can spend a lot of time crater feeding. Mm. So maybe the southern area is the prime crater feeding zone, and the unwritten agreement is spotteds leave us alone. We've got this spot for crater feeding. Y'all can have the north spot for your close zippy zip to the deep water to feed.
And they aren't, how often do you?
Super technical.
Hey man, I get it. Like it works for me. You're using words like buffet. I know what that is. How often are they then fighting each other, these two, over resources, or just like they bump into each other? Is that, you see that very much?
So along the shore, we don't see them mixing. So even though there's sometimes, if you just looked at a map, you'd say, oh, I saw a spotted dolphin here one day, and another day I saw a bottlenose dolphin. There is some overlap, but not at the same time. So what we don't really know yet is why they don't mix close to shore, when we know that they mix farther off into the rest of the DCP study area. Mm. We see mixed species groups. And that means not just like past each other, we were in the same space and time for just 2 seconds, and then we got out of there. They're actually interacting in mixed species groups. But we don't see aggression in it. And some of that comes down to how you define aggression.
How do you define aggression? Well, how, your kids. What, wait, you make your kids fight. You're going to tell a story about making your kids fight.
Oh. If someone from Mars watched my kids wrestling, they might really think that juvenile humans are super aggressive. But I understand their behavior, and I can see that they are just playing and roughhousing. Doesn't mean they don't take it too far sometimes, because they do, but it doesn't start out that way. So when we see the mixed species groups, yes, is there sometimes an open mouth on another dolphin? Yeah, but not if they're not biting. They're not really, you know, trying to scrape and hurt the other dolphin. They're just kind of being rough. So we see that more in the social repertoire as opposed to aggression.
So aggression would be where either the intent of the behavior or the intent of the animal, assuming you can apply that to its cognition, is to cause some sort of harm. So pain, purposely causing damage to another animal.
Yeah, and often as a result of competition. And this paper has kind of given us a glimmer in maybe they segregate, they partition a bit more so that they don't have to run the risk of getting hurt by being aggressive with each other. They can just give each other the space when they need it and then kind of make love, not war, when they do overlap. And so to get to know each other and sort out relationships. But they're not really attacking, fighting. They're not really being aggressive with each other.
So it's like going to the mall, and there's a bunch of people and they all want to buy stuff, and they're all just going around each other and waiting their turn and that sort of stuff. So they've got some sort of system in place, these two species, for avoiding conflict, that sounds like.
Yeah, because conflict is risky.
Speaking of conflict, this is going to be my segue into the next exciting paper, which was apparently received a lot of news attention. I think it made Nicole famous. Are you famous now, Nicole? Yes.
I guess it depends how you define fame, but I certainly am very famous.
Yeah, and it's a similar sort of issue involving also spotted dolphins, and it has to do with this immigration event. which you mentioned very briefly, and the extent to which we might expect two dolphins from different groups, whether or not different or same species, to fight or get along, or what happens when there is weird overlap. So the background for this paper is that there were those dolphins that came from away, from somewhere else, to Bimini and started suddenly living there. And then you were looking at what was happening. And there's a lot of words that I need you to define before we even get into this. The title of the paper is easy to understand. The partial, and we'll get into partial later on, the partial merger of two dolphin societies. And then you talk about dolphin societies, because we talked on this podcast, and people who know dolphins know that they live in sort of complicated groups. That's one of their claims to fame, as it were. But you describe them using a couple different terms, multi-level or fission-fusion, and bisexual phylopatry. So can you please define each of these three vocabulary things, starting with multi-level, then fission-fusion, then bisexual phylopatry? What does that all mean?
So the multi-level that you started with refers to the fact that there are different levels of relationships. So there are some at the, I guess you could say, the base, the strongest relationships, which you might expect between mothers and calves throughout the time that the calf needs the mom. But also we see that same-sex partners will have preferential relationships that they keep over long periods of time. So especially around Bimini, we see that the male spotted dolphins will spend a lot of time with the same group of males, Split John, Prince William, Speedy, Tim, and Buster all preferentially hang out together. And that kind of has been established for, we had another paper that found it was at least over 16 years. And then on top of that, you'll have the more fluid relationships that maybe change from year to year based on reproductive state or, you know, other social needs. And then the biggest level is the whole Bimini group, which we think is about 120 dolphins. And then that defines, you know, different ages and different, the two sexes, how they fit into each other in a social system.
Yeah, so that's like, it's like humans. I mean, humans, we live in a totally different kind of society, but we have like a family unit and a small friend group and an extended friend group. And then maybe you live in a village or on a, you know, a block or whatever. And so each of those, in a sense, is a level of, in the social world.
Yes. And there are, it's not quite as clear cut as it is in humans, except around Shark Bay. There is a group of dolphins that have their first order alliances is a pair or a trio of males. Second order is about 14. It's a bunch of trios and pairs that are working together. And then there are third order alliances where they have second order alliances that work together. So we don't have it quite as established as that. But yes, just very broadly.
Yeah.
As you said, we have the different levels of the strength of the relationships.
So how is fission fusion as a concept fit into that?
So that also we can relate to as humans. It simply means that the animals are coming together to form groups and they're breaking apart based on the needs of the moment. So if you are foraging, maybe you want to be with a certain group of individuals who know where the good foraging grounds are or that you can cooperate with. Maybe it's beneficial to be in a smaller group. Or if it's dangerous, maybe it's beneficial to be in a bigger group. Then when you come and you're socializing, maybe you're with a different group of individuals. If you're a younger dolphin, maybe you're with other young dolphins so that you can practice your social skills. Or if you're an adult, maybe you're going to go and look for adults of the opposite sex so you can reproduce. So it's basically like we do. We spend our days either at work or at school with a certain group of individuals. Even within that, the individuals that we spend time with might depend on the time of day. So if we're having lunch with our closer friends at work versus the people you're actually working with and exchanging time with, and then you go home to your family. So the groups are going to break apart depending on what you need in the moment.
Right. Okay. So in Bimini, you've got a group of, 120, you were saying, Yes. Dolphins. They live there. That's the place that they live. And they are sort of split into these multi-levels, and then they have a fission-fusion society, so they're interacting with each other for different reasons at different times. So that's just how they live. And then also, you've got this, and I hope I'm saying the second part of this word correctly. I feel like there's a couple options. Bisexual philopatry, or philopatry. Philopatry. Why don't we say that? That could work. Okay, this term seems unnecessarily confusing. Bisexual, it could mean a number of different things. Philopatry is relatively straightforward, I suppose, if you're into the old Latin and Greek. But please explain what the term means.
Sure. So philopatry basically means that you stay where you were born. And this could mean that you stay in the same social group in which you were born, or you can stay in the same physical geographic area, or you can do both. And so you can think of, well, I guess it happens in people, right? So if you grow up and you stay in the place, or you have left and you come back and settle down and have your own family in the same place where you're born versus moving across the country or around the world and having your family there. So we see different patterns in cetaceans, but for the Bimini dolphins, they are born around Bimini and they stay around Bimini, and they are one big group of 120 spotted dolphins that mix, as you were saying, depending on the time of day and all of that. So they're in the same social group as well. If we think about killer whales, there are groups that move. They don't stay in the same geographic area, but individuals who are born into that social group will stay with that social group, and the group itself just physically moves. So philopatry can have a few different specific definitions, but in our case, it means that they are born around Bimini and they stay there with the same group of dolphins.
Right.
And then bisexual means that in this case, both sexes do it.
Okay.
There are other groups of social animals that where one sex will stay and then the other one will leave and make its life somewhere else. Commonly, that is the females will stay, yeah, and the males will leave.
Like lions. Like you get, isn't that how lions work? Like you get a male lions, they reach sexual maturity, and then a bunch of the males get like, get out of here. Like you got to, yes, go somewhere else and start your own family. Is that how do gorillas work? Let's not get into gorillas. Let's continue talking about dolphins. So this is what we've got. We've got a situation where Bimini has a bunch of dolphins living in a group, multi-level society, vision fusion. They're hanging out with each other. Philopatry. They're going to stay together as a group, probably most likely in Bimini, both the males and the females. Boom. Wonderful. 2013 crops up. Suddenly you've got, 40 new dolphins out of nowhere that show up. And suddenly, what are they doing, this new group? That's what this paper was researching. So explain what was going on and what you found, and then why you wanted to study this.
Should I start why we wanted to study this?
Yeah.
Or do you want me to start in order?
Well, where did they come from? Let's figure that out. Where did these dolphins come from?
Sure. We didn't know for quite a long time, but we were able to, using citizen scientists, confirm that they come from the White Sand Ridge, which is an area that is to the north of Bimini. It's on the Little Bahama Bank, just north of the island where Freeport is, if people are familiar with that.
Is it far from Bimini?
It's 160 kilometers.
Okay, so close.
If you're an aquatic mammal, really not that far, but they have to cross, and that's 160 kilometers from the northernmost point of the Great Bahama Bank, which is where the Bimini dolphins are, to what we think is the center of the White Sand Ridge area. So it's farther to Bimini, but to the safe, shallow area where we know that the dolphins spend time, it's 160 kilometers. But they will have had to cross a very deep channel where there are lots of scary things, like sharks.
Sure.
And probably water that is moving more quickly than you'd like to expend energy crossing very frequently.
So it's an adventure. Like they're like, let's get out of here. We're going to cross this scary area and we're going to head south.
Yes.
So does that then assume that previously there would not have been a lot of mixing between those two populations? It sounds like there would not be.
Yes. We think that because of all of the environmental things that are between the two groups, they wouldn't have had a reason to mix frequently. That doesn't mean that individuals won't have gone from one group to the other, you know, for whatever reason. But such a large group, it was almost 50 dolphins that we saw moving all at once across this really deep channel coming down to Bimini is very unprecedented.
Yeah. And if they're both sort of geographically philopatric, you would assume that both groups would want to stay locally where they were. So an individual popping over would be weird. You wouldn't normally see that for this species. Yeah.
You wouldn't normally see that.
Great. Okay. So they show up. These random dolphins, they've come over this long, scary journey over the dangerous deep water, avoiding some sharks. They pop into Bimini, and then they seem to be staying there. First of all, how many dolphins showed up in 2013?
We saw 46 unfamiliar dolphins that we were able to confirm were from White Sand Ridge. There's another group that studies the dolphins on the White Sand Ridge, and they report a little over 50 dolphins that had disappeared.
Ooh, maybe some got eaten on the way. That's the whole exciting drama. Now
it's possible, yeah. But it's also likely that they just use different space. We never saw.
Yeah. So what did you observe, and what did you think once you started this study you were going to find, and why did you initiate this study?
The first year that we saw them, I noticed that they were different, partly because they didn't have spot patterns that are recognized, but their behaviors were also very different. They had less personal space with humans in the water than the Bimini dolphins do. They were a little bit more agonistic in their social exchanges.
So they're beating each other up more.
A little bit, yes. Not that they were necessarily more aggressive with that intention that we were discussing before, but yes.
So they were more bitey.
Yes.
Okay. So they bit each other more either because they're friends. It's like bros in a locker room. There's just a lot of punching around, but maybe they're not in an actual fight. So they're more bro-ish, these dolphins. That's an official scientific term I'm just throwing in there. You may not have been aware of it. Bro-ish. Anyways.
We're going to use it.
What's that? You like?
We're going to use it now.
You're bro-ish from now on. If you do not.
Adding it to the repertoire.
Please submit an article to Nature and then introduce the word bro-ish. Wonderful. Bro-ish. Okay. So they're more agonistic. They're more beating up-y of each other. More bro-ish.
Yes. And even though they came from an area that's very similar, they live in White Sand Ridge. They have the shallow bank. They have the access to deep water. Broadly, they have a similar social structure to what we see around Bimini. We didn't know how their different behaviors would impact the Bimini dolphins, partly just because the Bimini dolphins are not bro-ish. If you had, you know, female lacrosse team that went into the male hockey team's locker room, maybe they would feel out of place because they're not that bro-ish. I don't know. But
I don't know. Female lacrosse players can be pretty tough, but I get what she's putting down. I get it.
I like how y'all are running with this analogy.
Yeah, we're gonna
like it.
Incorporate curling if you can, or field hockey. I'd love to see some more multi-level sports references.
But the other thing is, maybe having more friends around or potential friends is gonna throw off your social system, or having a bunch of strangers around, maybe that would change your social system because you're making tighter bonds with those that you do trust so that you can keep out the individuals that you don't trust. But, you know, we have those preferential relationships between male Bimini dolphins. Maybe having other adult males who have experience that the Bimini dolphins don't have, maybe that would be interesting and you would want to be friends with them. And maybe that would then mean that the friends that you had before are left behind. So we didn't know how it was going to affect it, but we thought that there might be an effect of 50 new dolphins joining the Bimini dolphins.
You think? It sounds like it could be dramatic. It could be a big fight, or it could be a love fest. Who knows? But you've got a lot of things that you looked at. We don't have to talk about all of the aspects of it, because some of them are more complicated than others. But you have things like affiliative contacts, like how friendly they are. Operational sex ratios, that sounds clinical. And then aggressive behavior, agonistic behavior. So just summarize what it is you saw as these two dolphin groups started interacting.
So let's start with the operational sex ratio, which was something we looked at to try to figure out what the reason behind this giant move would be. So that's the number of available partners. So that are of age, that are currently available, meaning they don't have a calf or are not pregnant.
So this is available lady dolphins to males of a sexual maturity age. Okay.
Yes.
It's like what every university student wants to know when they start to go to a university. Like, how, like I know that ratio. Yeah. Okay.
And we were wondering if the operational sex ratio changed in White Sand Ridge and influenced the move, or if the operational sex ratio around Bimini was more favorable. And we didn't find that seemed to influence it at all, because it didn't really seem to be different between the two groups, and it didn't change once they got there. The White Sand Ridge dolphins were of all ages, of both sexes, and so it's not like they only brought reproductively viable males or females.
Okay.
So it was a big group of everything.
So that assumes the reason for leaving and crossing the scary water was not because there's a bunch of females looking for better guys or vice versa. It was just everybody in the same, like, makeup, male, female, calf, juvenile, whatever, just went over in mass migration for some reason.
Yes.
Okay. So that's interesting. First of all, good job. Well done. Operational sex ratio has been explained. So what about the behavior they had toward each other?
So we saw a lot of what you were calling affiliative contact. We call that the friendly behaviors. That's the pectoral fin contact, gentle behaviors, body rubbing, rubbing their melon, their forehead against bellies and all of that good stuff. We didn't look at it specifically, but it's even pair swimming. Well, they will slowly swim next to each other. And that seems to be something that they do between pairs that have a preferential bond. We saw a lot of affiliative contact between Bimini and White Sand Ridge dolphins.
Okay. So they were friendly toward each other. They showed up and they started rubbing each other, because that's the sort of dolphin signal for let's be pals. We've written, like, I don't know, between the three of us, how many papers we have all written just about dolphins touching each other for some reason that we have to explain. But it's usually for reasons of affiliative contact, right? So friendliness.
Yes.
Making bonds, reinforcing bonds. So you saw this random group of dolphins shows up, starts making friends with, essentially, and being nice to this group of local Bimini residents.
Yes.
Which is...
And I will say, the first year that we saw them, we didn't see mixed Bimini White Sand Ridge groups. Not to say that there weren't any, just we didn't record any. But by the second year, in 2014, we started seeing them very regularly. And in 2014, also saw them exchanging affiliative contact.
Okay.
So it was very quick after their arrival that they made friends.
So does that mean that these foreigners from White Sand Ridge have integrated into the multi-level society that existed in Bimini already and were doing the fission-fusion thing? So they were maybe going off with one or two of the Bimini dolphins and one or two of the White Sand Ridge. Is that what happened? They like literally just like meshed right in?
Yes, basically. And now we will see big groups of spotted dolphins, and often they will include both Bimini and White Sand Ridge dolphins.
Then that leaves me with this question. First of all, that's fascinating, and we're going to get into why that's fascinating. But why did you then call it a partial merger? Why are they not fully? It sounds like they fully merged. Why is this just a partial merger? It's right in the title. What happened there?
Well, we don't want to overstate things. We haven't seen every single individual that we have seen since 2014 from the White Sand Ridge around Bimini every single year. So we don't know if maybe they're just using more northern areas where we don't go, or even southern areas. Maybe some of them went back. We have nobody's going to the White Sand Ridge from DCP to confirm what individuals have gone back, or maybe they kept moving south. There are other Atlantic spotted dolphin groups, but we do know that they have at least partially merged. There are at least some White Sand Ridge dolphins that have stayed, and at least some Bimini dolphins that have accepted them into their social group. So it's also possible that some of the Bimini dolphins just don't hang out with the White Sand Ridge dolphins.
Yeah.
So if they see them there, maybe they like keep going and hang out with other friends. But we can say that they have at least partially merged.
Right.
So scientists always hedging our bets.
Well, that's it. So for those of you out there who are not scientists, this might sound weird. Like, well, just like, okay, if there's one guy, one Jack the Dolphin who doesn't play with the other dolphins, like, just say merged. But like, no, technically, scientists are all about technically. You can't say that because they're not necessarily fully merged. It's just covering all your bases so you don't get called out for being a sloppy scientist. So you had to put partial merger. That makes complete sense. Now, explain why this is so weird. Because for people who study animals, and especially mammals, like complex social mammals, it's pretty darn strange what just happened here. Like, this is pretty fascinating. So why is it so fascinating?
There are so many reasons, and it is so cool. So firstly, what we were talking about, it is very strange that 50 dolphins moved from one place to another. As far as we know, they had everything they needed. They had mates, they had food, they had safe areas to shelter, and it was dangerous to get to Bimini. So why would they have done that? And a side note, the group that moved is most of one of the clusters. So around White Sand Ridge, they tend to segregate into northern, central, and southern social clusters. And it was almost one entire cluster that moved. So it also isn't, it seems like it's a group decision that everybody wanted to go down, or somebody decided we're all moving down or something. It wasn't just 50 random White Sand Ridge dolphins that all came down.
Oh, while we're on that subject, what is your hypothesis as to why they moved?
We have a few that we're not able to confirm.
That's good science speak.
Yes. So one theory is that the food availability has shifted, which a different study looked at the chlorophyll levels, which you can kind of relate to the productivity of the water. I don't find the evidence compelling enough to suggest that the prey shift was drastic enough for this entire group of dolphins to move. Another option would be predator shifts. If there all of a sudden were a ton more sharks and there wasn't enough safe area for all of the spotted dolphins in the White Sand Ridge. We don't have any evidence for that. It's not like shark scientists all of a sudden were like, oh my gosh, there's 100 times more sharks in this area.
Yeah.
But we don't have evidence against it. It's also possible that there is more human pressure. There's also ecotourism around White Sand Ridge. People go out on ecotour boats and swim with the dolphins. Maybe there were all of a sudden more boats going out and that pressure the dolphins into moving. We don't know.
Huh. That's fascinating in a way, because this whole thing that you just said, and you're like, I don't understand why any of this is happening. That's
yeah,
great. But okay, so back to the weirdness factor. So it's weird that they moved in the first place, and then they started being friendly to each other, which is also pretty weird. And you've got more reasons for weirdness. So talk to us about the weirdness.
Yes. We have other social species that are similarly structured to dolphins, including humans, but also chimpanzees, gorillas, bonobos, lots of primate species on land will not behave this way. They will maybe mix individuals. Sometimes small groups will mix, but usually for chimpanzees and gorillas especially, that only happens if there are no adult males, or if it's just a group of females and their babies. But even that, females can be very aggressive towards strange females. So it's very unusual for large groups of terrestrial social species to come together and mix peacefully. When you see peaceful integration, it usually means that there has been some limiting resource that is drawing them together. So, and you can even picture, like, in Africa around a watering hole, you have lions and gazelles that are all sharing water because it's scarce. They're not next to each other and they're not buddy-buddy, but they're tolerant and, you know, kind of ignoring each other. That's kind of what happens in other primate species, where if the food is going down, they have to come together and they're tolerant of each other because nobody has any other option.
So correct
me.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if people who study chimpanzees, if you were to take 50 chimpanzees in a family group or society and then put them in another area where 50 chimpanzees lived and you said, okay, get along now and it'll be fine, they would murder each other. Like, that would be, like, for sure a recipe for insane violence and probably death. Like, there's no way that would happen.
Especially a group that has adults of both sexes and all age classes.
Yeah.
That would not end well.
Yeah, it's Lord of the Flies style. And but the same would be true of, like, of humans. You know what I mean? If I'm in my house with, my family. We are three people. If you just put three other random people in my house, at some point, somebody's probably going to punch somebody, I imagine. Because humans have a hard time with that sort of thing. Total random strangers coming and being in your space would be strange. But these dolphins just, they're like, oh, we're all best friends now. Let's all just mate and have babies, and we're just going to be one big loving family, which is weird. And it's more similar to, I think you talk about in the paper, bonobos. Can you explain about that?
Yes, bonobos will form temporary intergroup encounters where there'll be groups of similar, both sexes, adults, that come together and will be peaceful. They have seen affiliative exchanges, but they don't last that long. It's usually a few days, maybe a few months, but it's not over years the way we've seen with spotted dolphins. And they do attribute that to the fact that females are dominant in their society, not males. So there's a little bit of a, their social dynamics are different than the chimpanzees and gorillas.
Less bro stuff. There's less bro stuff, I think, is the technical term. Yep. So that makes this absolutely extraordinary. And this is probably why the news cycle picked up on it, which is, are there any other examples of something similar to this, an animal species that lives in this kind of grouping where they just two completely foreign groups integrated this? I mean, is there another example, or are you it? Is this paper it?
This paper is it in terms of a long-term study. There was one study of spinner dolphins off of Midway Atoll in Hawaii where the study itself was talking about something different, but it was kind of an extra added on feature was that there was an immigrant group that arrived. I think it was about 60 immigrants that joined this group, and they did not get along. When they did see them interacting, they were aggressive. But things are a little bit different around the Hawaiian Islands. They do have a limiting resource, which is the shelter, the bays where the dolphins can rest. So the resident dolphins did not want the immigrant dolphins using their resting bays, which is fair because they live there, and that's so they would aggressively remove them from the resting bays. But that was only over the course of 1 year. We don't really know what happened after that. So we are the only example of a long-term merger like this.
Yeah. And do you think that's why everyone was so interested in this paper? Like, what were people saying about it? Like, because you've done, like, lots of these interviews, I guess. And so why was everybody so fascinated with this? And how were they spinning it to sound interesting?
They're spinning it as, like, strangers make love, not war. So basically what you were saying, and nobody came out and directly said humans, but the fact that primate species who are so closely related to us are aggressive when they have strangers come in, I think that's enough. The fact that these dolphins didn't have any aggression, it wasn't even just that they were friendly and formed bonds, it's the fact that we didn't record overt aggression. Not to say that it didn't happen when we weren't looking, but we have enough underwater encounters recorded that you would have expected to record it at least once. We didn't see any overt aggression. And to add on to what Cal was saying about how we define aggression, it's not just the behaviors that they're exchanging, but it's the context. So if you think about dogs playing, you can hear growling, you can see teeth bared, but in the context, you'll also see play bows and their tails are wagging and there's other things that are happening. So in the dolphins, when we see what we might call aggressive behaviors, the jawing and kind of biting, if we don't see the receiving individual swim away as if they're avoiding, or the receiving individual comes back and, like, initiates a friendly behavior, it's the context of what's happening in the broader group. And we didn't see any overt aggression.
It's crazy. So that's fascinating. That's a major discovery when it comes to dolphin behavior. I can see why everyone is very excited by this.
Yes. And that one other thing that was very cool is that the adult males, between White Sand Ridge and Bimini adult males, we saw bonds form that were pretty much as strong as the bonds that we were seeing between bimini males, which is very unusual because those dolphins were adults when they arrived and they formed these strong bonds as adults. We will see a lot of times that these bonds need to form from the juvenile stage, and they develop over time. You know, you're friends with this kid next to you in class, but you don't hang out at home. So then you have to have some play dates, and all of a sudden you're 25 and you're best friends still. Huh. So the fact that they were adult dolphins that formed these strong bonds is very, very unusual.
Very, it'd be like two football teams about to start a match. They run at each other and they're like, you know what? We're just going to sit down and have some tea.
Yes.
Like, that's how weird that would be, essentially, for a primate species anyway.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Okay, so we've covered everything. We've got the two papers. We know a lot now about dolphin social groups and mingling of social groups. Even, I think for both of these papers, what's fascinating is that you found there's just not a lot of aggression between either two species or same species, but from different areas. So in that sense, they're quite related, and they may be revealing something about how dolphins deal with each other. Do you think that this is too broad strokes? I mean, that's a pretty broad strokes statement, because I can think of a lot of mean, aggressive dolphin behavior. But how would you then characterize delphinids, or at least these two species, when it comes to this kind of capacity for interacting with each other, strangers from different or same species? Or do you not want to make a broad stroke statement because you're a good scientist? But if you had to, what would you say?
Well, I don't think it would be broadly across delphinids. Maybe broadly across delphinids, they have the potential to do this. But like those midway spinner dolphins, they had a limiting resource that would make them want to be aggressive to strangers. The bimini dolphins have so much shallow water to rest in. They have such easy access to deep water for foraging. They have even numbers of males and females, so everybody has the opportunity to mate. They don't have like any weird courting or anything that they have to do. So theoretically, if small dolphins had the option to live the easy life that they do, they probably would be just as welcoming to strangers. The other thing I think is that the bimini dolphins, and because we haven't seen this anywhere else, but they are so used to so much change. Like the pier didn't really affect them, but they also see how many boats every single day that come over from Florida. They probably can hear all of the shipping boats, whatever, the ships that go in the Gulf Stream and come into Bimini to drop off things. They see a lot of action every day. They're not like secluded from human activity. So maybe that also makes them more flexible, and they're more capable of dealing with stressors.
Mm. They're like the dude from the Big Lebowski.
With hurricanes.
Yeah.
Oh, hurricanes. Sorry, yeah. I was going to say, like,
you know, they're also dealing with storms, yeah. And.
Yeah, yeah. So they deal with a lot of stuff. In other words, they've been sort of traumatized to the point of they've just developed a way to like be cool and chill and just take it on the chin kind of thing. Even when another 50 random dolphins shows up to eat all their fish, they're just like, whatever, that's fine. We'll figure this out, sort of thing. Hopefully it doesn't come from a place of trauma, but but they're...
Experience.
That's
right. They're worldly dolphins.
They're worldly dolphins. That's right. They've gone on a couple exchange programs. They've learned about different cultures. That's wonderful. But this has been very fascinating. And is there anything that you didn't talk about that you wanted to say, like, oh my gosh, you forgot to mention this exciting thing about that paper that we missed? Or have we covered, because we covered a lot of things. We've been at it for a full hour. We now know what all these terms mean. I'm very excited.
I think it's valuable to remind folks that these papers were only possible through long-term studies, and that we need to value science not just for one snippet when it's in a headline, but even the kind of when it's out of sight, out of mind, continuing these types of studies, supporting research in different areas is the only way these types of patterns can emerge.
That's a great point. Yes, because there's none of this data would exist if this hadn't been like a decade's worth of research. It's not just that you went out there on a boat and you said, oh, not a lot of aggression. Then you went home and had lunch. People had been looking at it for years and years and years and years to draw that conclusion. In fact,
and we wouldn't have even known that these were interesting things if we hadn't been watching them since 2003. Both of these were kind of natural experiments.
Oh, you're right.
We didn't plan to put that pier there to see what happened when the dolphins use that space. We didn't plan to move 50 dolphins. It happened while we were watching.
And the fact that you even recognized that these 50 dolphins were randos is because you knew the population so well. If you had just been a person, you would have known nothing. You had to have been an experienced researcher to even ask the question, which is fascinating. Yeah. And you know, this is like, there's data in there from the early 2000s. It's possible some of that data was collected by me, because I used to be out on these research festivals before my daughter was born 14 years ago. I'm so old. And it's possible that I've contributed in some small way by at least identifying one dolphin, Kel. I was like, I think that's split jaw.
True story. I'm sure you identified a species, counted a group. It took a lot long for us.
So it's thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's thanks to me personally. Personally, I had a major influence on all of these studies, and that is not accurate. This is down to the two of you being geniuses, and these are really awesome papers. And I'm excited that the Dolphin Communication Project, we're all involved in this. And I'm glad the world has figured out that this was a fascinating finding, this last paper specifically, because it really is quite fundamentally interesting, I think. And what is next? What are you currently working on? This is a good question while we're here. Do you have anything to promote? Like, what's your Twitter handle? That kind of stuff. You know, it's the end of a podcast. You have to self-promote. So self-promote your science. The both of you.
We are working on looking at the bottlenose, general use of Bimini over the years. So DCP has focused a lot on the spotted dolphins. That's what the ecotourism industry tends to focus on. And we finally got a chance to catch our breath, and we're going to assess kind of how the bottlenose are using Bimini, with what regularity, the nerdy term site fidelity, are individual bottlenose coming back year after year? And if so, how many of them, which ones? And so that's one of the things in the pipeline.
Cool.
And I know Nicole has something else in the works.
Oh, what's that?
Are you talking about the paper I'm currently working on, or the thing I'm really excited about?
Oh, wait, that assumes that the paper you're working on is not exciting. So
I was going with the paper you're working on, because I don't want to, you know, maybe you're not ready to publicly spoiler alert your upcoming project.
No, too late now. I need to know.
The upcoming paper is based on one of my dissertation chapters. That's the only reason it's not exciting, is because I've been thinking about it for too long. But looking at all body contact between the spotted dolphins, and if there are any individual preferences in the types of contacts that they're using. So not just pectoral fin contact that we have traditionally looked at as the Dolphin Communication Project.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It sounds interesting. You sound like you could be bored with it after having looked at it for a decade or whatever, but you're still into it. That's nice. But what is this new thing that's exciting you so much? Now I need to know.
I've wanted to look at the behaviors as they change over a female's reproductive cycle for a very long time, but it didn't fit into my dissertation.
Reproductive cycle, how do you define that?
So looking at how other individuals behave towards her, and then how she behaves towards others when she's potentially in estrus. So we're going to look at when she had a calf, and then kind of count backwards and estimate approximately when she was about when she got pregnant with that calf. And then, you know, throughout the course of a life as a juvenile, when she can't have babies yet, and then when she's reproductively viable, how that behavior changes, not just her behavior and who she's hanging out with, but how others will treat her.
Mm.
So there's specifically one dolphin, a female, who has had some trouble getting pregnant. She recently has had calves, though, so things are okay. But she forms very strong bonds with certain males, And I'm curious to know if that's just a her thing, if she just gets along with males very well, or if it's because she has been available to reproduce with longer because she hasn't been able to get pregnant and have the calf successfully. So is it because she has more time of interest to males that they are interested in being friends with her, or if she just likes to be friends with males?
That's interesting. So that's just based on when she had a calf last. That you're not talking about like ovulation cycles and things. You're just saying like at some point in this period.
Yeah, because we can't, all of our research being non-invasive and we don't have those data, we can only estimate when she was impregnated and then based on when she had a calf. And yes.
Right. I mean, that's hard to estimate from fellow humans. I don't know how it seems nearly impossible to do from a dolphin. But so it's sort of like, yes, she had her calf then, she should be able to have one now. So then how is she being treated by her peers?
Yep.
And vice versa, how is she treating her peers? That's interesting. That's great. All right, well, that's going to end up in Science or Nature, and then we'll have you back on here when you win the Nobel, and it'll be great. So thank you both for joining the Dolphin Pod. This has been great. A lot of details, but I think it's easy to understand what's going on here, and I think it's easy for people to understand why these papers are important and why our research is important and why long-term research is important, as Kel points out. So, yeah. How do people find you online? Are you people that like to be found online? Are you like science? No. Kel is shaking her head. Please do not try and find Kel. Anyone? No one talk to Kel. Nicole.
Are you even online?
Talk to me. I don't understand the internet and it scares me.
Okay. But you are like the chief like outreachy kind of person for the Dolphin Communication Project. You're very good at that.
They can kind of hide behind the DCP.
The logo. Okay.
Thingums. Handles.
Okay.
If you will.
But Nicole, are you out there in the world making your science known and engaging people? Do you want people to find you?
Sure. I'm on Facebook. That's usually where I post about researchy stuff. But I'm also public on Instagram if you want to post stories about being in Bimini and stuff. So that's possible. But if you have any questions, I'm welcome. I welcome the emails. Nicole@dcpmail.org. That's the easiest email I've ever had.
Nicole@dcpmail.org. Yeah. Okay, great. So if you have questions for Nicole about dolphins or just life advice, I assume, or any questions, you'll take any questions, please email her.
College. I love talking to people about their journey through college and post-college.
Okay, so you're offering free, like, coaching.
I'm not coaching. Oh, goodness. No, I'm not trained to coach. But helping people, like, when they're uncertain, is college right for me? I've graduated from college. What do I do next?
Oh,
I dream of being a marine biologist, but my mom says I should be a doctor. Those things.
Oh, great. Well, this is great. Well, listen, there's probably people listening who are literally interested in those answers. So please email Nicole@dcpmail.org for useful life advice.
If you need help, like with your grocery list, you can reach me at Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. @dcpmail.org.
Only grocery lists, though. No other questions.
You know.
Specifically.
Yeah, no other type of shopping list.
No, that's right. That's right. Okay, well, thank you both for joining the Dolphin Pod, and I guess this is us saying goodbye to the people. Goodbye, people.
Bye, people.
The Dolphin Pod is a science podcast covering all aspects of dolphin science, from news stories to new research, interviews with dolphin experts, and fun and crazy dolphin facts. It's brought to you by the Dolphin Communication Project, a nonprofit research and education organization whose mission is to promote the scientific study of dolphins and inspire their conservation. Learn more by visiting dolphincommunicationproject.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Please get in touch with the Dolphin Communication Project through Twitter or our Facebook page. If you've got questions or ideas for a future episode, let us know.